If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's something seriously wrong with the farms in Ireland. Part 1. Every summer when I was a child, my family would visit our relatives in the northwest of Ireland, in a rural, low-populated region called Donegal. Leaving our home in England, we would road trip through Scotland before taking a ferry across the Irish Sea. Driving a further 3 hours through the last frontier of the United Kingdom, my two older brothers and I would know when we were close to our relative's farm, because the country roads would suddenly turn bumpy as hell. Donegal is a breathtaking part of the country. Its Atlantic coastway is wild and rugged, with pastoral green hills and misty mountains. The villages are very traditional, surrounded by numerous farms, cow and sheep fields. My family and I would always stay at my grandmother's farmhouse, which stands out a mile away due to its bright red-painted coating. These relatives are from my mother's side, and although Donegal, and even Ireland for that matter, is very sparsely populated, my mother's family is extremely large. She has a dozen siblings, which is always mind-blowing to me. And what's more, I have so many cousins, I've yet to meet them all. I've always enjoyed these summer holidays on the farm, where I could spend every day playing around the grounds and feeding the different farm animals. Although I usually played with my two older brothers on the farm, by the time I was 12, they were too old to play with me, and would rather go around to one of our cousins' houses nearby to either ride dirt bikes or play video games. So, I was mostly stuck on the farm by myself. Luckily, I had one cousin, Grain, who lived close by and was around my age. Grain was a tomboy, and so we're more or less like the same activities. I absolutely loved it here, and so did my brothers and my dad. In fact, we loved Donegal so much, we even talked about moving here. But for some strange reason, although my mom had always missed her family, she was dead against any ideas of relocating. When we asked her why, she would always have a different answer. There wasn't enough jobs, it's too remote, and so on. But unfortunately for my mom, we always left the family decisions to a majority vote, and so, if the 4 out of 5 of us wanted to relocate to Donegal, we were going to. On one of these summer evenings on the farm, and having neither my brothers or Grain to play with, my Uncle Dave, who ran the family farm, asked me if I'd like to come with him to see a baby calf being born on one of the nearby farms. Having never seen a newborn calf before, I enthusiastically agreed to tag along. Driving for 10 minutes down the bumpy country road, we pulled outside the entrance of a rather large cow field, where, waiting for my Uncle Dave, were 3 other farmers. Knowing how big my Irish family was, I assumed I was probably related to these men too. Getting out of the car, these 3 farmers stared instantly at me, appearing both shocked and angry. Striding up to my Uncle Dave, one of the farmers yells at him, "What the hell this Wayne's doing here?" taken back a little by the hostility. I then hear my Uncle Dave reply, "He needs to know. You know as well as I do, they can't move here." Feeling rather uncomfortable by this confrontation, I was now somewhat confused. What do I need to know? And more importantly, why can't we move here? Before I could turn to Uncle Dave to ask him, the four men quickly halt their bickering and enter through the field gate entrance. Following the men into the cow field, the late evening had turned dark by now, and not wanting to ruin my good trainers by stepping in any cow paths, I walked very cautiously and slowly, so slow in fact, I had gotten separated from my uncle's group. Trying to follow the voices through the darkness and thick grass, I suddenly stopped in my tracks because in front of me, staring back with unblinking eyes, was a very large cow. So large, I at first mistook it for a bull. In the past, my Uncle Dave had warned me not to play in the cow fields, because if cows are with their calves, they may charge at you. Seeing this huge cow staring stonewall at me, I really was quite terrified, because already knowing how freakishly fast cows can be, I knew if it charged at me, there was little chance I would outrun it. Thankfully, the cow stayed exactly where it was, before losing interest in me and moving on. I know it sounds ridiculous talking about my terrifying encounter with the cow, but I was a city boy after all. Although I regularly fed the cows on the family farm, these animals still felt somewhat alien to me, even after all these years. Brushing off my close encounter, I continued to try and find my Uncle Dave. I eventually found them on the far side of the field's corner. Approaching my uncle's group, I then see they're not alone. Standing by them were three more men and a woman, all dressed in farmer's clothing. But surprisingly, my cousin Grain was also with them. I go over to Grain and say hello, but she didn't even seem to realize I was there. She was too busy staring over at something behind the group of farmers. Curious as to what Grain was looking at, I moved around to get a better look. And what I see is another cow. Just a regular red cow laying down on the grass. Getting out my phone to turn on the flashlight, I quickly realized this must be the cow that was giving birth. Its stomach was swollen, and there were patches of blood stained on the grass around it. But then I saw something. On the other side of this red cow, nestled in the grass beneath the bushes, was the calf. And rather sadly, it was stillborn. But what greatly concerned me wasn't that this calf was dead. What concerned me was its appearance. Although the calf's head was covered in red slime fur, the rest of it wasn't. The rest of it didn't have any fur at all, just skin. And what made every single fiber of my body crawl was that this calf's body, its brittle infant body, it belonged to a human. Curled up into a fetal position, its head was indeed that of a calf. But what I should have been seeing as two front and hind legs were instead two human arms and legs, no longer or shorter than my own. Feeling terrified and at the same time in disbelief, I leave the calf, or whatever it was, to go back to Grain, all the while turning to shine my flashlight on the calf as though to see if it had still had the same appearance. Before I could make it back to the group of adults, Grain stops me. With a look of concern on her face, she stares silently back at me before she says,
"You're not supposed to be here. It was supposed to be a secret."
telling her that my Uncle Dave had brought me. I then asked what the hell that thing was.
"I'm not allowed to tell you," she says. "This was supposed to be a secret."
20 or 30 so minutes later, we were all standing around as though waiting for something, before the lights of a vehicle pulled into the field, and a man gets out to come over to us. This man wasn't a farmer.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Farmer. He was some sort of veterinarian. Uncle Dave and the others bring him to tend to the calf's mother, and as he did, me and Grain were made to wait inside one of the men's tractors. We sat inside the tractor for what felt like hours. Even though it was summer, the night was very cold, and I was only wearing a soccer jersey and shorts. I tried prying Grain for more information as to what was going on, but she wouldn't talk about it, or at least wasn't allowed to talk about it. Luckily, my determination for answers got the better of her, because more than an hour later, with nothing but the cold night air and awkward silence to accompany us both, Grain finally gave in.
"This happens every couple of years to all the farms here, but we're not supposed to talk about it. It brings bad luck."
I then remembered something. When my dad said he wanted us to move here, my mom was dead against it. If anything, she looked scared just considering it, almost afraid to know the answer. I work up the courage to ask Grain.
"Does your mom know about this?"
Sat stiffly in the driver's seat, Grain cranes her neck around to me.
"Of course she knows," Grain reveals. "Everyone here knows."
It made sense now. No wonder my mom didn't want to move here. She never ever seemed excited whenever we planned on visiting, which was strange to me because my mom clearly loved her family. I then remembered something else. A couple of years ago, I remember waking up in the middle of the night inside the farmhouse, and I could hear the cows on the farm screaming. The screaming was so bad, I couldn't even get back to sleep that night. The next morning, rushing through my breakfast to go play on the farm, Uncle Dave firmly tells me and my brothers to stay away from the cowshed. He doesn't even give an explanation. Later on that night, after what must have been a good 3 hours, my Uncle Dave and the others came over to the tractor. Shaking Uncle Dave's hand, the veterinarian gets into his vehicle and leaves out of the field. I then noticed two of the other farmers were carrying a black bag of something, each holding separate ends as they walked. I could see there was something heavy inside, and my first thought was that they were carrying the dead calf, or whatever it was, away. Appearing as though everyone was leaving now, Uncle Dave comes over to the tractor to say that we're going back to the farmhouse, and that we would drop off Grain home along the way. Having taken Grain home, we then made our way back along the country road, where both me and Uncle Dave sat in complete silence. Uncle Dave driving, just staring at the stretch of road in front of us, and me staring silently at him. By the time we get back to the farmhouse, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and the farm was dead silent. Pulling up outside the farm, Uncle Dave switches off the car engine. Without saying a word, we both remain in silence. I felt too awkward to ask him what I had just seen, but I knew he was waiting for me to do so. Still, not saying a word to one another, Uncle Dave turns from the driver's seat to me, and he tells me everything Grain wouldn't. "Don't you see now why you can't move here?" he said. "There's something wrong with this place, son. This place is cursed. Your mammy knows. She knows since she was a Wayne. That's why she doesn't want you living here." "Why does this happen?" I ask him. "This has been happening for generations, son. For hundreds of years. The animals in the county have been giving birth to these things." The way my Uncle Dave was explaining all this to me, it was almost like a confession. Like he had wanted to tell the truth about what's been happening here all his life. "It's not just the cows. It's the pigs, the sheep, the horses, and even the dogs."
"The dogs?"
"It's always the same. They have the head as normal, but the body's always different."
It was only now, after a long and terrifying night, that I suddenly started to become emotional. That and I was completely exhausted. Realizing this was all too much for a young boy to handle, I think my Uncle Dave tried to put my mind at ease.
"Don't worry, son. They never live."
Although I wanted all the answers, I now felt as though I knew far too much. But there was one more thing I still wanted to know. What did they do with the bodies?
"Don't worry about it, son. Just tell your mammy that you know. But don't go telling your brothers or your daddy now. She never wanted them knowing."
By the next morning, the constantly rethinking everything that had happened the previous night, I looked around the farmhouse for my mom. Thankfully, she was alone in her bedroom folding clothes, so I took the opportunity to talk to her in private. Entering the room, she asked me how it was that I saw the calf being born for the first time. Staring back at her warm smile, my mouth opens to make words, but nothing comes out. And instantly, my mom knows what happened.
"I could kill your Uncle Dave," she said. "He said it was going to be a normal birth."
Breaking down in tears right in front of her, my mom comes over to comfort me in her arms.
"I'm not crying, you're crying."
"It's okay, chicken. There's no need to be afraid."
After she tried explaining to me what Grain and Uncle Dave had already told me, her comforting demeanor suddenly turned serious. Clasping her hands upon each side of my arms, my mom crouches down eye level with me, and with the most serious look on her face I had ever seen, she demands of me,
"Listen, chicken, whatever you do, don't you dare go telling your brothers or your dad. They could never know. It's going to be our little secret, okay?"
Still with tears in my eyes, I nod a silent yes to her.
"Good man yourself," she says.
We went back home to England a week later. I never told my brothers or my dad the truth of what I had saw, of what really happens on those farms, and I refused to ever step foot inside of County Donegal again. But here's the thing. I recently went back to Ireland, years later in my adulthood, and on my travels, I learned my mom and Uncle Dave weren't telling me the whole truth. This curse, it wasn't regional, and sometimes, they do live. Part 2. After the experience that summer, I did what any other 12-year-old boy would hopefully do.
I carried on with my life as best I could. Although I never got over what happened, having to deal with constant nightmares and sleepless nights through those awkward teenage years, I somehow managed to cope. By the time I was a young man, I eventually found my way to university. It was during my university years that I actually met someone, and by someone, I mean a girl. Her name was Lauren, and funnily enough, she was Irish. But thankfully enough, Laura was from much farther south than Donegal. We had already been dating for over a year, and things continued to go surprisingly well between us. So well, in fact, Laura kept insisting that I meet her family back home. Ever since that summer in Donegal, I had never again stepped foot on Irish soil. Although I know the curse that haunted me for the past 10 years was only a regional phenomena, the idea of stepping back into the country where my experience took place was far too much for my mind to handle. But Lauren was so excited by the idea, and sooner or later, I knew it was eventually going to happen. So swallowing my childhood trauma as best I could, we both made plans to visit her family the following summer. Unlike Donegal, a remote landscape wedged at the very top of the northwestern corner, Lauren's family lived in the Midlands, only an hour or two outside of Dublin. Taking a short flight from England, we then made our way off the motorway and onto the country roads, where I was surprised to see how flat everything was, in contrast with the mountainous, rugged land I spent many a childhood summers in. Lauren's family lived in a very small but lovely country village, home to no more than 400 people and surrounded by many farms, cow fields, and a very long stretch of bogland. Like any boyfriend going to meet their girlfriend's family for the first time, I was very nervous. But because this was my first time back in Ireland for so long, I was more nervous than I would like to have been. As it turns out, I had no reason to be so worrisome, as I found Laura's family to be nothing but welcoming. Her mom was very warm and comforting, much like my own, and her dad was a polite, old-fashioned sort of gent.
"There's no Mr. Mahone here. Call me John."
Laura also had two younger brothers I managed to get along with. They were very into their sports, which we bonded over. And just like Lauren warned me, they couldn't help but mimic my dull English accent any chance they got. In the back garden, which was basically a small field, Lauren's brothers even showed me how to play hurling, which, if you're not familiar with, it's kind of like hockey, except you're free to use your hands. My cousin Grain did try teaching me once, but being many years out of practice, I did somewhat embarrass myself. If it wasn't hurling they were teaching me, it was an array of Gaelic slurs, Pogmoctong being the only one I remember. A couple of days of vegetarian roasts later, things were going surprisingly smooth. Although Lauren's family had taken a shine to me, which included their border collie Dexter, my mind still wasn't at ease. Knowing I was back inside the country where my childhood trauma took place, like most nights since I was 12, I just couldn't fall asleep. Staring up at the ceiling through the darkness, I must have remained in that position for hours. By the time the dawn is seeping through the bedroom curtains, I checked my phone to realize it was now 5 a.m. Accepting no sleep is going to come my way, I leave Lauren sleeping peacefully to go on an early morning walk along the country roads. Quietly leaving the house from the front gate, Dexter, the family dog, follows me out onto the cul-de-sac road, as though expecting to come with me. I wasn't sure if he was allowed to roam out on his own, but seeming as though he was, I let him tag along for company. Following the road leading out of the village, I eventually cut down a thin gravel pathway. Passing by the secluded property of the farm, I continue on the gravel path until I then find myself on the outskirts of a bog. although they do have bogs in Donegal. I had never been on them, and so I took this opportunity to explore something new. Taking to exploring the bog, I then stumbled upon a trail that leads me through a man-made forest. It seems as though the further I walk, the more things I discover, because following the very same trail through the forest with Dexter, I then discover a narrow railway line used for transporting peat, cutting through the artificial trees. Now feeling curious as to where this railway may lead me, I leave the trail to follow along it. Stepping over the never-ending rows of wooden planks, I suddenly hear a rustling far out in the trees. Whatever it is, it sounds large, and believing it's more likely a deer, I squint my tired eyes through the darkness of the trees to see it. Although the interior is too dark to make out a visible shape, I could still hear the rustling moving closer. Which is strange, as if it is a deer, it would most likely keep a safe distance away. Whatever it is, a deer probably, Dexter senses the thing is nearby. Letting out a deep, gurgling growl as though sensing danger, Dexter suddenly races into the trees after whatever this was.
Dexter! Dexter, come back!
I shout after him. When my shouts and whistles are met to no avail, I resort to calling him in a more familiar yet phony Irish accent, emphasizing on "er."
Dexter! Dexter!
Still with no Dexter in sight, I return to whistling for several minutes, fearing I may have lost my girlfriend's family dog. Thankfully enough, for the sake of my relationship with Lauren, Dexter does return. And continuing to follow along the railway line, we're eventually led out of the forest and back onto the exposed bog. Checking the time on my phone, I see now it is well after 7 a.m. Wanting to make my way back to Lauren by now, I choose to continue along the railway, hoping it will lead me back in the direction of my main country road. While trying to find my way back, Dexter had taken to wandering around the bog looking for smells, when, all of a sudden, he starts digging through a section of damp soil. Trying to call Dexter back to the railway, he ignores my yells and keeps digging frantically. So frantically. I have to squelch my way through the bog and get him. By the time I get to Dexter, he is still digging obsessively, as though at the bottom of the bog, a savory bone is waiting for him. Pulling him away without using too much force, I then see he has dug a surprisingly deep hole, and to my surprise, I realize there's something down there. Fencing Dexter off with my arms, I tried to get a better look at whatever is in the hole. Still buried beneath the soil, the object is difficult for me to make out. But then I see what the object is. And when I do, I feel an instant chill of deja vu enter my body. What is peeking out of the bottom of the hole is a face. A tiny, shriveled infant face. It's a baby piglet. A dead baby piglet. Its eyes are closed and lifeless. And although it is hard to see under the soil, I knew this piglet had lived no more than a few minutes, because protruding from its face, the round bulge of its tiny snout is barely even noticeable. Believing the piglet was stillborn, I then wondered why it had been buried here. Is that what the farmers here do? They bury their stillborn animals in the bog? How many other baby piglets had been buried here? Wanting to quickly forget about this and make my way back to the village, a sudden, instant thought enters my brain. You only saw its head. Feeling my own heart now racing in my chest, the next and only thought is to run far away from this dead thing even if that meant running all the way back to Dublin and finding the first flight back to the UK. But I can't. I can't leave it. I must know. Holding back Dexter, I then allow him to continue digging. Scraping more of the soil from the hole, I again pull him away. And that's when I see it. Staring down into the hole's crater, I can perfectly distinguish the piglet's body. Its skin is pink and hairless, covered over four perfectly matching limbs. And on the very end of every single one of those limbs are five digits each. 10 human fingers and 10 human toes. The curse. It followed me. I wanted to believe more than anything, this is simply my insomnia causing me to hallucinate. A mere manifestation of my childhood trauma. But then in my mind, I once again hear my Uncle Dave's words, said to me 10 years prior.
Don't you worry, son. They never live.
Overcome by an unbearable fear I have only ever known in my nightmares, I choose to leave the dead piglet, or whatever this was, making my way back along the railway with Dexter to follow the exact route we had came in. Returning to the village, I enter through the front gate of the house where Lauren's dad comes to greet me.
We've been wondering where you two had gotten off to,
he says, standing there in the driveway, expecting me to answer him. All I could do is simply stare back, speechless, all the while wondering if behind that welcoming exterior, he knew of the dark secret I just discovered.
We walked along the bog, I managed to murmur.
As soon as I say this, the smiling, contented face of Lauren's dad shifted instantly. He knew I had seen something. Even if I hadn't told him where I had been, my face would have said it all.
I wouldn't go back there if I was you,
Lauren's dad replies shiftly.
That land belongs to the company. They don't take too well of people trotting across.
Accepting his words of warning, I nod back to his now inanimate demeanor before making my way inside the house. After breakfast that morning, dry toast with fried mushrooms but no bacon, I pull Lauren aside in private to confess to her what I had seen.
God, babe, you really do look tired. Why don't you lie down for a couple of hours?
Barely processing the words that she just said, I look sternly at her, ready to tell Lauren everything I know from when I was a child and from this very same morning. Lauren, I know.
Know what?
She simply replies. Lauren, I know. I know about the curse. Lauren now pauses on me, appearing slightly startled. But to my surprise, she then says to me,
Have my brothers been messing with you again?
She didn't know. She had no idea what I was talking about, let alone taking my words seriously. Even if she did know, her face would have instantly told me whether or not she was lying.
Babe, I think you should lie down. You're starting to worry me now.
Lauren, I found something out in the bog this morning, but if I told you what it was, you shouldn't believe me. I had never seen Lauren look at me this way. She seemed not only confused by the words I'm saying, but due to how serious they are, she also appears very concerned.
Well, what? What did you find?
I couldn't tell her. I knew if I had told her in that very moment, she'd look at me like I was mad. But she had a right to know. She grew up here, and she deserved to know the truth as to what was really going on. I was already sure her dad knew. The way he looked at me practically gave it away. Whether Lauren's mom was also in the know, that was still up for debate.
I'll show it to you. We'll go back to the bog this afternoon and you could see it for yourself. But don't tell your parents. Just tell them that we're going for a walk down the road or something,
That afternoon, although I still hadn't slept, me and Laura made our way out of the village and towards the bog. I told her to bring Dexter with us so he could find the scent of the dead piglet. But to my annoyance, Lauren also brought with her a tennis ball for Dexter, and for some reason, a hurling stick to hit it with. Reaching the bog, we then trek our way through the man-made forest and on to the railway, eventually leading us towards the area Dexter had dug the hole. Searching with Laura around the bog's uneven surface, the dead piglet, and even the hole containing it are nowhere in sight. Too busy bothering Laura to throw the ball for him, Dexter is of no help to us, and without his nose, that piglet was basically a needle in a very damp haystack. Every square meter of the bog looked too similar to the next, and as we continued scavenging, we're actually moving further away from where the hole should have been. But eventually, I do find it, and the reason it took us so long to do so was because someone reburied it. Taking the hurling stick from Lauren, or what she simply called a hurl, I use it like a spade to re-dig the hole. I keep digging. I dig until the hole was as deep as Dexter had made it. Continuing to shovel to no avail, I eventually make the hole deeper than I remember it being, until I realize, whether I truly accepted it or not, the piglet isn't here.
No! Shit! I exclaimed. What's wrong?
Lauren inquires behind me.
Can't you find it?
Lauren, it's gone. It's not here.
What's gone? God's sakes, babe. Just tell me what it is we're looking for.
It was no use. Whether it was even here to begin with, the piglet was gone, and I knew I had to tell Lauren the truth, without a single shred of evidence whatsoever. Rising defeatedly to my feet, I turned around to her. All right, babes, I exhale. I'm gonna let you in on the truth, but what I found this morning wasn't the first time. You remember me telling you about my grandmother's farm. As I'm about to tell Lauren everything from start to finish, I then see something in the distance over her shoulder. Staring with fatigued eyes towards the forest, what I see is the silhouette of something peeking out from behind a tree. Trying to blink the blurriness from my eyes, the silhouette looks no clearer to me, leaving me wondering if what I'm seeing is another person or an animal. Realizing something behind her has my attention, Lauren turns her body around from me, and in no time at all, she also makes out the silhouette, staring from the distance at us both.
What is that?
She asks. Pulling the phone from her pocket, Lauren then uses the camera to zoom in on whatever is watching us, and while I wait for Lauren to confirm what this is through the pixels on her screen, I only grow more and more anxious, until, breaking the silence around us, Lauren wails out in front of me.
Oh my God!
To be continued. Part 3, Final. What Lauren sees through the screen, staring back at us from inside the forest, is the naked body of a human being. Its pale, bare arms clasped around the tree it's hiding behind. But what stares back at us, with seemingly pure black, unblinking eyes and snow-white fur, is the head of a cow.
Babes, what is that?
Lauren frighteningly asks.
I don't know.
My trembling voice replies. Whether my eyes deceive me or not, I know perfectly well what this is. This is my worst fear come true. Dexter, upon sensing Lauren's and my own distress, notices the strange entity watching us from the woods. And with a loud, threatening bark, Dexter races after this thing, like a wolf after its prey. disappearing through the darkness of the trees.
Dexter, no!
Lauren yells before chasing after him. Lauren, don't! Don't go in there! She doesn't listen. By the time I'm deciding whether to go after her, Lauren was already gone, vanishing inside the forest. I knew I had to go after her. I didn't want to. I didn't want to be inside the forest with that thing. But Lauren left me no choice. Swallowing the childhood fear of mine, I entered through the forest after her, following Lauren's yells of Dexter's name. The closer I come to her cries, the more panicked and hysterical they sound. She was reacting to something. Something terrible was happening. By the time I catch sight of her through the thin trees, I begin to hear other sounds. The sounds of deep growling and snarling, intertwined with low, soul-piercing groans. Groans of pain and torment. I catch up to Lauren, and I see her standing as motionless as the trees around us. And in front of her, on the forest floor, I see what was making the horrific sounds. What I see is Dexter. His domesticated jaws clasped around the throat of this thing, as though trying to tear the life from it, in the process staining the mossy white fur of its neck in dark currant red. The creature doesn't even seem to try to defend itself, as though paralyzed with fear, weakly attempting to push Dexter away with trembling human hands. Among Dexter's primal snarls and groans of the creature's agony, my ears are filled with Lauren's own terrified screams.
"Do something!"
she screams at me. Beyond terrified myself, I know I need to take charge. I can't just stand here and let this suffering continue. Still holding Lauren's hurl in my hands, I force myself forward with every step. Close enough now to Dexter, but far enough away from this thing that won't buck me with its hind human legs. Holding Lauren's hurl up high, foolishly feeling the need to defend myself, I grab a hold of Dexter's loose collar, trying to jerk him desperately away from this tormented creature. But my fear of the creature prevents me from doing so, until I have to resort to twisting the collar around Dexter's neck, squeezing him into submission. Now holding him back, Lauren comes over to latch Dexter's lead onto him, barking endlessly at the creature with no off switch. Even with the two of us now restraining him, Dexter is still determined to continue the attack. The cream whiteness of his canine teeth and the strip of his snout stained with the creature's blood. Tying the dog's lead around the narrow trunk of a tree, keeping Dexter at bay, me and Lauren stare over at the creature on the ground. Clawing at his open wound, its bare legs scrape lines through the dead leaves and soil, and as it continues to let out deep, shrieking groans of pain. All me and Lauren can do is watch it suffer.
"Do something,"
Lauren suddenly yells at me.
"You need to do something, it's suffering."
"What am I supposed to do?" I yell back at her.
"Anything, I can't listen to it anymore."
Clueless to what I'm supposed to do, I turn down to the ash wood of Lauren's hurl, still clenched in my now shaking right hand. Turning back up to Lauren, I see her eyes glued to it. When her eyes finally meet mine, among the strained yaps of Dexter and the creature's endless inhuman groans, with the granting nod of her head, Lauren and I know what's needed to be done. Possessed by an overwhelming fear of this creature, I still cannot bear to see it suffer. It wasn't human, but it was still an animal as far as I was aware. Slowly moving towards it, the hurl in my hand suddenly feels extremely heavy. Eventually, I stood over the creature, close enough that I could pretty much make out its ungodly appearance. I see its red, clotted hands still clawing over the loose, shredded skin of its throat. Following along its arms, where the bloodstains end, I realize the fair pigmentation of its flesh is covered in an extremely thin layer of white fur, so thin the naked human eye can barely see it. Continuing along the jerk of its body, my eyes stop on what I fear to stare at the most. Its non-human but very animal head. Frozen in the middle, between the swatting flaps of its ears and the abyss of its square-gaped mouth, having not fallen silent, I meet the pure blackness of its unblinking eyes. Staring this creature dead in the eye, I feel like I can't move no more than a deer in headlights. I don't know how long I was like this, but Lauren, freeing me of my paralysis, shouts over,
"What are you waiting for?"
Regaining feeling in my limbs, I realize the longer I stall, the more this creature's suffering will continue. Raising the hurl to the air, with both hands firmly on the handle, the creature beneath me shows no signs of fear whatsoever. It wants me to do it. It wants me to end its suffering. But it wasn't because of the pain Dexter had caused it. I think the suffering came from its own existence. I think this thing knew it wasn't supposed to be alive. The way Dexter attacked this thing, it was as though some primal part of him also sensed it was an abomination, an unnatural organism like a cancer in the body. Raising the hurl higher above me, I talked myself through what I have to do. A hard and fatal blow to the head. No second tries. Don't make this creature's suffering any worse. Like a woodsman, ready to strike a fallen log with his axe, I stand over the cow-human creature with nothing left to do but end its painful existence once and for all. But I can't do it. I just can't. I can't bring myself to kill this monstrosity that had haunted me for 10 years now. I was too afraid. Dropping Lauren's hurl to the floor, I go back over to her and Dexter. Come on, we need to leave.
We can't just leave it here, she argues. It's in pain.
What else can we do for it, Lauren? I raised my voice to her. We need to leave, now. We make our way out of the forest, continuously having to restrain Dexter, still wanting to finish his kill. But as we do, we once again hear the groans of the creature, and with every column of trees we pass, the groans grow ever louder. It was calling after us. Don't listen to it, Lauren. The deep, gurgling shriek of those groans piercing through us both. It was like a groan for help. It was begging us not to leave it. Escaping the forest, we hurriedly made our way through the bog and back to the village. And as we do, I tell Lauren everything. I tell her what I found earlier that morning and what I experienced 10 years ago as a kid. And I tell her about the curse. And the words Uncle Dave said to me that very same night. Don't you worry, son. They never live. I asked Lauren if she wanted to tell her parents about what we just went through, as they most likely already knew of the curse.
No, she says. I'm not ready to talk about it.
Later that evening, and safe inside Lauren's family home, we all sit down for supper. Lauren's mom having made a vegetarian Sunday roast. Although her family are very deep in conversation around the dinner table, me and Lauren remain dead silent. Sat across the narrow table from one another, I try to share a glance with her, but Lauren doesn't even look at me, motionlessly staring down at her untouched dinner plate.
Aren't you hungry, love?
Lauren's mom concerningly asks. Replying with a single word,
no.
Lauren stands up from the table and silently leaves the room.
Is she feeling unwell or anything?
Her mom tries prodding me. Trying to be quick on my feet, I tell Lauren's mom we had a fight while on our walk. although she was very warm and welcoming up until that point. For the rest of the night, Lauren's mom was somewhat cold towards me, as if she just assumed it was my fault for mine and Lauren's imaginary fight. Though we hadn't said much of anything, as soon as Lauren leaves the room, I turn to see her dad staring daggers at me. He obviously knew where we had been. Having not slept for more than 24 hours, I stumble my way back to the bedroom, where I find Lauren fast asleep, or at least pretending to be asleep. Although I was so exhausted from the sleep deprivation and the horrific events of the day, I still couldn't manage to rest my eyes. The house and village outside may have been dead quiet, but in my conflicted mind, I keep hearing those groans of the creature, as though its screams for help had reached all the way into the village and through the windows of the house. By the early hours of the next morning, and still painfully awake, I stumble my way through the dark house to the bathroom. Entering the living room, I see the kitchen light in the next room is still on. Passing by the open door to the kitchen, I see Lauren's dad sat down at the dinner table with a bottle of whiskey beside him. With the same grim expression, I see him staring at me through the dark entryway, as though he was already been waiting for me. Trying to play dumb, I enter the kitchen towards him and I ask, "You couldn't sleep either?" Lauren's dad was in no mood for fake pleasantries, and continuing to stare at me with authoritative eyes, he then says to me, as though giving an order, "Sit down, son." Taking a seat across from him, I watch Lauren's dad pour himself another glass of fine Irish whiskey, but to my surprise, he then gets up from his seat to place a glass in front of me. He sits back down and now pouring himself a glass, Lauren's dad once again stares daggers through me before demanding, "Now, tell me what you saw on that bog." While he waits for an answer, I try and think of what I'm gonna say, whether I should tell him the plain truth or try to skip around it. Choosing to play it safe, I was about to counter his question by asking what it is he thinks I saw. But before I could say a word, Lauren's dad interrupts, "Did you tell my daughter what it was you saw?" Now with anger in his voice. Afraid to tell the truth, I tried to encourage myself to just be a man and say it. After all, I was as much a victim in all of this as anyone. "We both saw it." Lauren's dad didn't look angry anymore. He looked afraid. Taking his half-full glass of whiskey, he drains the whole thing down his throat in one single motion. After another moment of silence between us, Lauren's dad then rises from his chair and leans forward over the table towards me. And with anger once again present in his face, he bellows out to me, "Tell me what it was you saw, the morning and after." Sick and tired of the secrets, and just tired in general, I tell Lauren's dad everything that happened the day prior. And while I do, not a single motion in his serious face changes. I don't even remember him blinking. He just stands there, stiffly, staring through me while I tell him the story. After telling him what he wanted to know, Lauren's dad continues to stare at me, unmoving. Feeling his anger towards me, having exposed this terrible secret to his daughter, and from an Englishman no less, I then break the silence by telling him what he wasn't expecting. "John, I already knew about the curse. I saw one of those things when I was a boy in Donegal." Once I revealed this to him, I noticed the red anger draining from his face, having quickly been replaced by white shock. "But it was dead, John. It was dead. My uncle told me they're always stillborn, that they never live. That thing I saw today, it was alive. It was a living thing, like you and me." Lauren's dad still doesn't say a word, remaining silently in his thoughts. He then makes his way back around the table towards me. Taking my untouched glass of whiskey, he fills the glass to the very top and hands it back to me, as though I was gonna need it for what he was about to say next. "We never wanted our young ones to find out," he confessed to me as he sits back down. "But I suppose sooner or later, one of them was bound to." Lauren's dad almost seemed relieved now. Relieved this secret was now in the open. "This happens all over, you know. Not just here. Not just where your ma's from. It's all over this bloody country." "Dear God," I thought silently to myself. "That suffering creature you saw, son, it came from that farm just down the road. That's my wife's family's farm. I didn't find out about the curse until after we were married."
"But why is it alive?" I ask impatiently. "How?"
"I don't know. All I know is that thing came from the farm's prized white cow. It was after winning awards at that plow festival the year before."
He again swallows down a full glass of whiskey, struggling to continue with the story.
"When that thing was born, they all saw it alive and moving. Moria's dad didn't have the heart to kill it. It was too human."
Listening to the story in sheer horror, I was now the one taking gulps of whiskey.
"They left it out in the bog to die, either to starve or freeze during the night. But it didn't. It lived."
"How long has it been out there?" I inquire.
"Got a few years now. Thankfully enough, the damn thing's afraid of people. It just stays hidden inside that forest. The workers on the bog occasionally see it every now and then, peeking from inside the trees, but it always keeps a safe distance."
I couldn't help but feel sorry for it. Despite my initial terror of that thing's existence, I realized it was just as much a victim as me. It was born, alone, not knowing what it was, hiding away from the outside world. I wasn't even sure if it was still alive out there, whether it died from its wounds or survived. Even now, I wish I ended its misery when I had the chance.
"There's something else," Lauren's dad spits out at me. "There's something else you ought to know, son."
I dreaded to know more. I didn't know how much more I could take.
"The government knows about this, you know. They've known since it was your government. They pay the farmers well enough to keep it a secret. But if the people in the country were to know the truth, it would destroy the agriculture. No one here or abroad would buy our produce. It would take its toll on the economy."
"That doesn't surprise me," I said. "Just seeing one of those things was enough to keep me away from beef."
"Why do you think we're a vegetarian family?" Lauren's dad replies, somehow finding humor at the end of this whole nightmare.
2 days later, me and Lauren cut our visit short to fly back home to the UK. Now knowing what happens in the very place that she grew up and what may still be out there in the bog, Lauren was more determined to leave than I was. She didn't know what was worse, that these things existed, whether dead or alive, or that her parents had kept it a secret her whole life. But I could understand why they did. Parents are supposed to protect their children from the monsters, whether imaginary or real. Just as I did when I was 12, me and Lauren got on with our lives. We stayed together, funnily enough. Even though the horrific experience we shared on that bog should have driven us apart, it surprisingly had the opposite effect. I think I forgot to mention it, but me and Lauren, we didn't just go to any university. We were documentary film students, and after our graduation, We both made it our life's mission to expose this curse once and for all, regardless of the consequences. This curse has now become my whole life, and now it was Lauren's. It had taken so much from us both. Our family, the places we grew up and loved, our innocence. This curse was a part of me now, and I was gonna pull it from my own nightmares and hold it up for everyone to see. But here's the thing. During our investigation, Lauren and I discovered a horrifying truth. The curse. It wasn't just tied to the land. It was tied to the people. And just like the history of the Irish people, it emigrated. The end.